If you believe assault is an act, not an adjective, your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. Got a little bit of housekeeping to go through. Just want to let everybody know that if you go to republicbroadcasting.org in the online store, you can get the new video called Camp FEMA, directed by William Lewis, and it's featuring RBN's own John Statmiller. So please, you're welcome to go there, check that out, and see what Camp FEMA is going to blow you away with. As well, we still have, I haven't mentioned it in a little bit, but I'll tell you now, we still have available the generic RBN business cards to help spread the word. For $8, you get 100 of them. It includes a free bumper sticker. It also includes shipping. And you can get that by calling Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 Central, 800-724-2719. Speak with Sandra in the business office. So 800-724-2719. Of course, the call-in number here if you'd like to participate in today's show is 800-313-9443. And I welcome your calls. I always enjoy it when I get callers. I also enjoy email, and I have an email I'd like to read to you. This comes from a buddy of mine by the name of Tim. It says, I found this quote to remember, as I'll call it, at the bottom of keepandbeararms.com. A state may not impose a change for the enjoyment of a right granted by the federal Constitution. The power to impose a license tax on the exercise of these freedoms is indeed as potent as the power of censorship, which this court has repeatedly struck down. A person cannot be compelled to purchase through a license or a license tax the privilege freely granted by the Constitution. And that was Murdoch v. Pennsylvania, 319 U.S. 105 in 1942. Then he continues, because my buddy Tim lives in California. Doesn't California violate this by requiring a person to purchase a California Department of Justice handgun safety certificate before that person can purchase a handgun? Well, sure, of course it does. It would be the same thing as a poll tax. So when you have to go out and spend your own hard-earned money to exercise your right to keep and bear arms, it is the same as a poll tax, which has been struck down and is illegal. There really is no difference. And if we could get someone along the lines of Second Amendment Foundation or the NRA to argue along those lines, we'd have a much better chance at getting this sort of thing handled permanently. State of Illinois, same thing. You've got to go through a class. You've got to pay money. You've got to carry around a card that says you're authorized to buy this particular type of gun. That is, again, like a poll tax. So it would violate Murdoch v. Pennsylvania. So what are we going to do about having this sort of thing going on? This is something that we need to compel the new people that we're going to vote into office to fix. Because remember, much like much like a toilet, every once in a while you got to flush it and get some clean water in there. You have to treat politicians and political office the same way. So it's about time to flush what's in the bowl and get some new stuff in there, because it's a little stinky right now. Stay tuned, more after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Karnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back. So we are talking in the last segment about how if you are forced to go spend money and get some sort of authorization or certification to exercise your Second Amendment right, it would be the same as a poll tax, which has already been shown to be illegal. If we could get a hold of attorneys, pro-Second Amendment groups, such as Second Amendment Foundation, NRA, things such as that, and give them that form of an argument to have in court, we might have a good, solid footing to get many of these laws dismissed as unconstitutional. Before we even get into that, we need to prevent those sorts of laws from happening again. Right now, in front of the California State Governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, he has a bill which has been passed by both state houses, sitting on his desk waiting for one of two things, either a signature or a veto. One of those two, there's a couple of bills there. One of those two bills deals with what I have talked about on this show before. It would limit everyone who is in California to purchasing 50 rounds of ammunition per month, maximum. So the most you could ever buy, if you're Johnny on the spot, every 30 days, is 600 rounds a year. Now that's for any and all guns, not just this gun or that gun. 50 rounds per month. And when you purchase those 50 rounds per month, they've got to be purchased from an authorized ammunition dealer. You've got to give your ID, fingerprints, and, you know, pay for whatever administrative fees they're going to charge you now for buying ammunition. Again, that was actually passed by both state houses, the state house, the state senate. Both houses passed it, waiting for the governor of California to either sign it or veto it. If you're in California, please go to the state website and give your comments to the governor and say, please veto this. Arms, when written by the founding fathers in the Second Amendment, arms were considered to be all about being able to actually shoot and operate the gun. They didn't have to put into there anything to do with the powder that was used, or the flints, or the bowls that actually went into the guns to fire. They didn't put all of the necessary pieces, parts in there. Had there actually been smokeless powder, full-on rounds like what we've got today, they wouldn't need to include primers, casings, powder, and projectiles when it came to keep and bear arms, because that's part of it. It's like when you speak about vehicles and your opportunity and right to operate that vehicle, you shouldn't have to include things such as gasoline or diesel, motor oil, transmission fluid, gear oil, to be able to operate these things. Now, in order to operate a vehicle, if any of the other things I just mentioned were not available, you eventually would not be able to operate that vehicle any longer, because it needs things other than just to exist itself. It needs fuel. It needs oil. It needs tires. Those sorts of things are a necessity in the long run to keeping these things going. It's a necessity to have ammunition to make a gun actually operate the way it was designed to operate. So the state of California has decided to circumvent that and make it to where your guns are rather inoperable because you have no ammunition to shoot through it. These are people who are representing the citizens of California. Now, we talk about non-representing representatives. That's exactly what's gone on in California with this. There you go. So, with that being said, another thing that happens in California, and has then hence gone on to other states, about this whole assault weapon sort of thing. Define an assault weapon. All they give are examples. Well, if you have an example of, say, a Bushmaster AR-15, and it goes through the features of a Bushmaster AR-15, let's say they change the name of that to a Bushmaster XM-15. Is it still considered one of the assault weapons? All it's done is change its name. So then they go on to literally profiling, and there's no other word for it, profiling your quote-unquote black guns. It's got a handguard, it's got a flash suppressor, it's got a bayonet lug, it's got a detachable magazine, it's got a telescoping buttstock, it's got blah-da-da-da-da-da-da. So these guns are being profiled. Again, as I said earlier, if we could get some sharp attorneys to argue that in court and argue it with other people who want to get into elected office and fight for guns on your behalf, they should be able to argue and articulate that guns are being profiled. Inanimate objects have been profiled. That's like them profiling a sort of shoe because they don't like the way that it looks, or a particular type of vehicle because they don't like the way it looks. Maybe the state legislators are going to decide that they don't like cars that have the hydraulics and hop up and down in South Central. So they're going to profile a type of car that has features such as glittery paint, bright spoke wheels with wide white wall tires, stereos that go over 115 decibels, white vinyl roofs, things such as that. All of this is profiling. Doesn't have anything to do with maybe this is a 1962 to 1974 Chevy Impala or Chevelle or whatever it might be. They're actually profiling looks. They're doing the same. That would be ridiculous. They're doing the same thing with guns. They certainly did it during the federal ban on quote-unquote assault rifles, assault weapons. So now what we've got is the same sort of thing that happens state by state. We may still face it at the federal level. Right now, they don't have the votes to pass it in either house. They can't pass it in the House of Representatives. They cannot pass it in the Senate. The Senate and the House, even though they're heavily controlled by Democrats, if you'll recall my story a few months ago, there were 60 Democrats in the House that sent a letter to the administration, to Eric Holder, that said, please do not even bother trying to get to introduce legislation into the House that would even come close to banning any sort of guns or be a reintroduction of the assault weapons ban, because we will not sponsor it, we will not vote for it, it will die. There's already been a number of Democrats in the Senate that have said the same thing. So they do not have the votes to pass that sort of thing at the federal level as of right now. Now, a lot of things can change that, such as another Columbine sort of event. If we had something like that and a huge outpouring of people that wanted to have this legislation introduced, I'll guarantee you right now, guys, absolutely right now, there's anti-gun legislation already written. A number of pieces of legislation already penned, sitting on a shelf, waiting for something like a Columbine or a Virginia Tech to happen. Waiting for that. And the moment that it happens, it's going to be pulled off the shelf, dusted off, and introduced within 48 hours. It's already there. If you remember, that happened right after Columbine. A piece of legislation was introduced into the Senate 2 days after Columbine. The day after would have been too early. 2 days after is when it went through. The Republican-controlled Senate voted it down. Huge public outcry against it. So the senators, fearing a backlash, said, okay, you know what? Let's bring it up for a vote again. And they did. They voted for it. It passed. It went on to the House, where it died in committee. They knew that was going to happen. However, it was an emotional sort of vote. You know, they say, don't make any decisions when you're overly emotional, especially in business and personal life, with your kids, with your significant other, whatever it may be. Don't make emotional decisions because you're not in the right mindset. The country at that time, after Columbine, was incredibly emotional. And they insisted on an emotional-based decision. After everything boiled down, they realized, you know what, we need guns to protect ourselves. At least the people that have the reason for deduction. They have a grasp for intellectual thought and thinking an entire process through. Now, I say that because that isn't part of the mindset of the anti-gun crowd. They don't have the ability to think everything through, to really see the entire set of ingredients in the pot of stew. They figure if they just remove the meat in the pot of stew and leave all of the other crap in there, it's still going to taste the same. They're just not going to have the meat. Well, you can't have the same taste if you remove the meat. Sorry, guys. It doesn't work that way. Same thing when it comes to these guns. The guns in the hands of private citizens to use as self-defense, including the ammunition that works in them, is absolutely essential for defense. Otherwise, the bad guys, the criminals, have a heyday, an absolute heyday, in being able to pick and choose who their victims will be. Not could be, not that they want to be, but that will be. And if you don't have the ability to protect yourself, because law enforcement is under no legal obligation to have to provide protection to any individual citizen, then you are screwed if you cannot use a gun to defend yourself. More after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
I had a friend and listener shoot me off a message yesterday. He was listening to the show a couple hours later. He listens to the archive each day. I believe it's on his way to work. And he sends me a message and he says, when I was discussing about how the difference between police and citizens, a police officer ended up having his taser taken away. He reports that a citizen pointed it at him like he was going to shoot him with it, so he pulls out his gun, shoots and kills the citizen. Of course, the bullets didn't land in the chest of the bad guy. It landed in his back as he was leaving. So he sends me a message, and he says, I believe that the police could articulate that if they were to tase somebody and that person was able to get the taser away from them and use it on the police officer, that the bad guy might then be able to get a hold of the officer's gun while he's succumbed to this tasing incident and then use that gun on the officer or someone else. I believe they could articulate that to where it's now no longer an equal playing field if a bad guy has a taser or if a cop has a taser. Therefore, if a cop has a taser, it's not considered lethal. But if a bad guy has a taser against a cop, it could then be considered lethal because he could use a taser, incapacitate the cop, then grab the gun and use it on the cop or somebody else. So that was where he was coming from. My response was simply this. That which is illegal for the citizenry, yet legal for the government, is tyranny. So if the police can articulate, okay, somebody got my taser, therefore, if they were to use it on me, and they were able to get my gun, and they were then able to use it on me or someone else, because I believe that they probably would if they could get it, that means that if they get a taser away from me or they have their own, I can shoot them with my gun. Now, that is a whole bunch of, well, I'm thinking, I'm guessing they probably could, da-da-da-da-da. Not too much difference if an officer were to articulate, well, the suspect left, got into his car. He could have used that car to run people down and injure or kill them. Therefore, I did the pit maneuver on him. The car rolled, and then I went over and hooked him up. Okay, if you haven't shown that you're going to do this sort of thing, then it's awfully difficult for the police officer to articulate that to anybody that's going to believe it. And I bring all of this up because of the case here in my town of Las Vegas, where on July 1st, there was the officer that was questioning a suspect. And this suspect decided he didn't want to answer any more questions. So he left. He wasn't under arrest. He was merely being questioned by the officers. So he decided to leave. There's a male officer and a female officer. They were detectives. So the detective decided to tase the suspect. Not once, but twice. He decided he didn't want to get tased anymore. So he yanked the taser out of the cop's hand and took off. So the cop takes out his gun, shoots him in the back. He dies. It goes to the coroner's inquest, and the coroner's inquest says, okay, it was justifiable. My eye. Not just my eye, my ass. It was not justifiable because the partner, the other detective, the female detective, never saw the bad guy turn around. I should say the suspect. I'm going to call him a bad guy. Saw the suspect. She never saw him turn around and point the taser at the detective that fired the round. Either did the other four witnesses, but they took the detective's word on it, even though the bullets went into the guy's back, hit him in the spine, and killed him. So, the other thing is, it's shown that every time an officer-involved shooting in Clark County, Nevada, where Las Vegas is, there's a police-involved shooting. Every single time since they started the coroner's inquest, process, every single officer-involved shooting has been listed as justified, including once upon a time, when an officer went in to clear a house, saw somebody with a shiny spoon in the kitchen, shot them dead, and they later said, oh, it was shiny and it looked like a gun. That was listed not justifiable but excusable. So what happened to the cop? Nothing. So there we go. That's the sort of thing that I'm talking about when it comes to the difference between if a cop can do it or if a citizen can do it. If a cop can do it, or anybody in the government can do it and get away with it, but the citizenry cannot, that is tyranny. Much the same as a corrections officer in, I believe it was Ohio, admitted to having a sexual relationship with an inmate against the inmate's will, but it wasn't forcible. It was just, look, I don't want to do this, but since you're a guard and I'm a female inmate, it's going to happen. He got away with it, no charges filed, and does not have to register as a sex offender. All he really had to do was go to trial. And he pled out to a lesser charge of burglary. All he really did was steal. Somewhat innocence in this case, away from the female inmate. That was the burglary. Probably will do no time. Probably will pay no fine. So, that sort of thing can't happen with us and shouldn't happen with him. More after the break. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
So the scumbags at Acorn have obviously been screwing up quite a bit. They've been booted from helping with the census, thank God. They've been booted from several other things within the last week. The last 10 days or so have been very, very bad for Acorn. And hopefully we'll see this worthless group shrivel up, dry up, and blow away in the wind. And of course, they're a favorite of de facto President Obama. He's been involved in Acorn for 20 years or so. So the Inspector General of the Justice Department has agreed to investigate whether Acorn has applied for or received any Department of Justice grant money. And that's under pressure from bipartisan criticism from both houses of Congress. So seven other inspector generals are being asked by a couple of congressional members to take a look at their funding mechanisms as well. Representative Lamar Smith is a Republican out of Texas, and he's the ranking Republican on the Judiciary Committee, issued a statement on Monday praising the Justice Department's inspector general decision to look into Acorn, whether they sought or received any grant money, or whether the department conducted any reviews of Acorn's use of such money. Now, that inspector general agreed to probe the matter at Smith's request. And here's a quote. As the primary federal law enforcement agency, the Justice Department has a responsibility to ensure that no organization receiving federal funds ignores our nation's laws, he said. I am pleased that Inspector General Glenn Fine has agreed to investigate whether the Justice Department provided federal funds to Acorn through its grant program. Smith said that Acorn has fostered a culture of corruption. Smith has also called for the FBI to launch an investigation. So if you'll remember, I read a story about 3 months ago where they were looking at Acorn employees in a few different states. Here in the state of Nevada, there are at least three separate investigations into Acorn employees or representatives thereof into voter fraud that happened in the state of Nevada. Now, Nevada is fairly equally split between Democrats and Republicans. We may have a Democrat governor for a while and then replace him with a Republican and then back and forth, back and forth. We almost always have one senator that's a Democrat and one senator that's a Republican. We used to have one representative in the House that would flip and flop. Then we had two, as usually split. Now we have three. And what we've got right now, we've got a Republican who is, a Republican governor, one Democrat and one Republican in the Senate, one Democrat and two Republicans in the House. It's a very well split state when it comes to that. Nevada normally votes Republican when it comes to the president. This time, it went Democrat towards Barack Obama, which was kind of a shocker. And now there's a look into Acorn, whether or not they committed voter fraud to push that sort of, to push our vote, Nevada's vote, and the electoral votes to Barack Obama. And a judge said, again, this is what I was getting to about the story I went through about 3 months ago, where a federal judge said in a separate case, I believe it was in Pennsylvania or Ohio, where he said, rather than looking at the player, someone should investigate the source itself, essentially telling federal investigators, go look at Acorn. They're the problem. So, calls for closer scrutiny of Acorn have come from many corners of Washington. The pressure builds in the wake of controversy over a series of hidden camera videotapes showing the organization's employees offering advice to undercover filmmakers posing as a pimp and a prostitute. Acorn has pledged to investigate its offices and workers. Now, that to me is a lot like internal affairs at a police department. It's the cops investigating the cops themselves. So if Acorn says they're going to investigate themselves, how good is that going to go? These videotapes, filmed by 25-year-old James O'Keefe and 20-year-old Hannah Giles, led to both the House and Senate voting to defund Acorn last week. Many Democrats joined Republicans in voting for the measure. Now, Senator Susan Collins, a Republican from Maine, and Representative Daryl Issa of California, Republican out of California, both the ranking members of their chamber's government oversight panels, are asking other agencies to do the same. The federal agencies and departments asked to review grants, contracts, entitlements, and other forms of assistance to Acorn and its affiliates include the Housing and Urban Development, Federal Emergency Management Agency, Treasury Department, U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, Labor Department, Small Business Administration, and Corporation for National and Community Services. Acorn is getting money from all over the place. And where do they get the money from? They get it from Congress. Where does Congress get the money from? Well, it's a combination of hosing you and I out of it through our paychecks and then asking the Federal Reserve to print more at a reasonably high interest rate that we're supposed to pay back. That's where this money's going, to Acorn. Here's a quote. As long as taxpayers are subsidizing Acorn and its affiliates, we need to use every measure possible to ensure that those dollars are being spent and managed appropriately. The way in which Acorn and its affiliates have structured their organization raises significant questions regarding their intent and use of federal dollars. Clearly, just taking them at their word isn't sufficient enough oversight. And that comes from Representative Ice of California. So why do I even bother going into Acorn on 2A radio? Because Acorn has a very strong anti-gun platform. They are an independent organization accepting tens of millions of dollars of federal money, and part of that money that they're using is to try to spread their anti-gun platform. All right? So, another little tidbit here, talking about, and of course, Obama's a big fan of Acorn. He's been involved in it for 20 years. So, this is kind of more mud on his face. He's kind of going Barackwards with his movement. He's not going forward anymore. He's really taking a few steps back and taking a hit in the polls. And in addition to that, there's an audio tape that's revealing that artists who are getting money from the National Endowment of Arts are being asked to support Obama's agenda. So here's a little story for you. An official at the White House Office of Public Engagement encouraged a group of artists on a conference call with the National Endowment for the Arts to produce works that supported the Obama administration's agenda, according to a transcript of the call. The 44-page transcript, which was posted Monday on biggovernment.com, you can go there and look at it, details an hour-long conference call on August 10th, hosted by the National Endowment of the Arts, the White House Office of Public Engagement, and United We Stand, a nationwide initiative launched by President Obama to increase volunteerism. Another ism. Here's a quote. We're going to need your help, and we're going to come at you with some specific asks here, says Buffy Weeks, Deputy Director of the White House Office of Public Engagement. But we know that you guys are ready for it and eager to participate. So, we want to thank you, and two, I hope you guys are ready. So, there she says, we know you guys are ready for it and eager to participate. So, assuming that people actually want to be pro-Obama, these artists. Wicks, who did not respond to requests for comments, was one of several officials on the call, along with then NEA Director of Communications Yossi Sargent and Michael Skolnick, political director for the hip-hop mogul Russell Simmons. They were seeking focused efforts by the artists in healthcare, energy and environment, education and community renewal. Sargent, who was reassigned by the NEA last week, said on the call that the effort was first of a brand new conversation. So, they're looking to get these artists who are accepting federal monies from the NEA, partially overlooked by the White House, to be pro-Obama. Essentially, if you don't, the hidden message is, if you don't, your money's going to go down the tubes. We're just not going to support you anymore. At least not you guys. We'll support other artists. How about that? Now, in the wake of the anti-gun group, Mayors Against Illegal Guns, you can go to MAIG, our Mayors Against Illegal Guns .com or .org. I was on there yesterday. And it says that they have a mission statement to both support the Second Amendment and remove illegal guns from the hands of criminals. However, what they're doing is not supporting the Second Amendment. What they've actually gone on there and said since 2004, 865 different times, alleged terrorists have been able to buy guns. So whichever means in which these alleged terrorists are able to buy guns, they want to close down to John and Joan Q. Citizen. They're talking about 865 of the roughly 1.1 million people that are on the terrorist watch list, most of whom have no idea that they're on there or why they're on there. That is what MAIG is talking about. They have proven that they are vehemently anti-gun, not just anti-violence when it comes to guns or illegal guns, but anti-gun. So they used to have 450 members. Now they have about 400. If you go to MAIG.com.org, whatever it is, it actually shows by state every member of the organization. I encourage all of my listeners to go to that site and look and see if your mayor is on there. If they are, I encourage you to get together with your other pro-gun buddies. If you're in an organization, great. If not, join one. And petition that mayor to get out. And it's funny. A lot of states on the East Coast, generally the states with tougher, already on the books gun control measures, tend to have the most members. Not in all cases. New Jersey, absolutely plastered with mayors that are members of this organization. Ohio, same thing. Lots and lots of people from Ohio. Pennsylvania, lots and lots of mayors from Pennsylvania. Of course, California, lots and lots of members from California. From Florida, surprisingly enough, there's a fair number of mayors out of the state of Florida, which is incredibly pro-gun. Happily to say, out of Nevada, not a single member from the state of Nevada is a member of this ridiculous organization. Again, roughly 50 members over the last couple of weeks have dropped their memberships into Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which is really Mayors Against the Second Amendment, Mayors Against Armed Citizens, is really what this has turned out to be. Of course, there's a lot of mayors out of the state of Illinois. It looks like nearly all of them. So check that out. Additionally, out of Illinois, I want to read you something that came from the state of Illinois' website. It's called Before You Fight. Fighting for your safety may be necessary. However, if you start out fighting, you cancel any other options that might be open to you. Since many attacks on women are not sexually motivated and are designed to degrade and humiliate, talking your way out of it may be easier. So this is literally, it's on bad guys attacking women on their state website. It says, there is a documentation of assailants that left a would-be victim alone after she told him she was pregnant and it would kill her baby. Some cases where women that were too old to even have a baby, it worked. This is what they're alleging. Telling an attacker that you have VD or AIDS can discourage him. Now, of course, if the attacker has it too, he's like, great, no problem. So that's not going to help. Then it says, it may sound disgusting, but putting your fingers into your throat and making yourself vomit usually gets result. This method is not often used except as a last resort. Use your imagination and you can think of others. So the state police of Illinois is literally telling women, if you're getting attacked, stuff your fingers down your throat and puke as a defense against an attacker? Are you serious? Could you just carry around a vomit balloon? I mean, what is this? They continue, the above methods are particularly important if your assailant has a gun or knife or there is more than one attacker. Fighting would probably be futile. Then it continues, if you must fight, so not that you're going to fight, but if you must fight, all right, it gives these. Guns stolen from residents are a primary way of getting guns into the hands of criminals. Be aware of those times and places where there is a potential for attack and be prepared to defend yourself, such as parking lots, walking at night, waiting for a bus, elevators, and others you will learn to recognize. Articles among your handbag that make useful weapons. All right. Now, it says guns are not a good idea, but these are the things that you could use as a weapon out of your handbag. A nail file, a rat tail comb, a teasing brush, pens and pencils, keys, anything rigid. And if you're able to get these sort of weapon, concentrate on these areas only when combating an assailant. Groin, eyes, ears, nose, throat. You should not swing at an assailant. Roundhouse or overhand blows are easy to deflect or evade. Your movement should be made with all your strength and should be straight jabs. Remember that screaming may be just as important as your defense as to your defense as any weapon. So you've got your woman, you've got an assailant with a knife or a gun. You don't know what it is, but it's a violent attack. And they tell you, don't use a gun, use a nail file or a rat tooth comb. Because you're going to be able to go through your handbag and find that sort of thing to try to defend yourself. This is coming from the Illinois State Police, the very people who are under no legal obligation to provide any sort of protection to anybody, male or female, any particular citizen. None. But they're telling you perhaps a toothbrush will fend them off. How about that? You think a toothbrush would work? Bring a toothbrush to a gunfight. It's unreal. Absolutely unreal. The state of Illinois is actually posting this on their website. Look at it yourself. Go to their site and check it out, especially if you live in Illinois. You've got to fight to get concealed weapons laws happening in that state, people. You've got to fight for it. Get it done. Stay tuned. More coming at you. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam taught him to shoot me a little
too well. Finger on the trigger, loaded bullet. Welcome back, guys. So here we are. We have got to realize that our rights are under attack now. Like never before. We've never had this sort of effect when it comes to our rights being stepped on like we have ever before in our history in this country. We've never had to worry about it. Not like we do now. Now we've always had to worry about politicians overstepping their bounds. But now we're looking at them overstepping their bounds and stepping on our rights unchecked. It's very difficult, it's very expensive, it's very costly to fight for our rights once legislation has gone through. But organization of the people to fight before legislation goes through is really the key. Freedom isn't free, guys. Freedom costs time, oftentimes costs money. If not directly out of your pocket, it costs money away from your job. It costs time and quite honestly, quality time away from your friends and family to have to take time to write letters, make phone calls, show up at events. This sort of thing is really what we need to do to ensure that our rights don't get eroded. And many people believe, you know, you can get born, go about your entire life, never worry about the government or what's going on, and everything should be fine. Everything should sustain itself because there's rules. There's the Constitution. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. You have to remember that. And when you've got people who are multi-term people in any sort of elected office, oftentimes a first-timer that's just trying to make waves and show, hey, look, I've got some authority here, so I'm going to use it. Not that I'm going to represent the will of the people that put me in, but people put me in to do what I want to do. That's really the big problem with a lot of elected officials. They think, people put me in to do what I want to do. That's not the case. It's one of the things that really bothered me about our last president, George W. George W. used to get on TV and say, well, I don't think, and my this, and I that, and me the other. It's not about you, George. It was about the country. And you're supposed to be doing what the country wanted. Not I believe, and my belief, and this. We didn't put you in office to exercise your beliefs. We put people into office to represent the people. Now, if you happen to live in a vastly anti-gun area, well, then you should probably be an anti-gun politician. If you live in a pro-life area, then you should represent your people as pro-life. Doesn't matter what your personal beliefs are. It matters on what the beliefs are of the people that put you into office. That's what it's all about. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become subjects of governmental rule. With that being said, folks, I will see you tomorrow. Have a wonderful day.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.